All right, Jerry, thank you so much for setting this up. This is a great opportunity to talk with one of the great leaders in college athletics. And so I wanted to go 6 hours because we have to recap a 19-year career and solve every problem in college sports, but I think we're going to try to keep it to an hour.
Great.
So I cut out the part about your childhood in Cleveland, and we're going to fast forward a little bit here, Gene. I'm curious in how you got here. So you grow up in Cleveland, you play football at Notre Dame, you're coaching at Notre Dame, you go to work at IBM, you get on the athletic director track, you become the athletic director at Eastern Michigan for 7 years, Iowa State for 7 years, you're at Arizona State for 5 years. When this Ohio State opening comes about, are you like, I'm getting that job? Did you get a call out of the blue? Did you have an idea in your head when you went to Arizona State? Man, if Notre Dame or Ohio State or a job like that opens up, I want to get back to the Midwest. What got you here?
Yeah, Doug, that's a great question. First, let me thank all of you for being here. And appreciate everyone's presence. Really appreciate it. And thank Ross for being here today. The transition has been phenomenal. When I first got the call from Ohio State, it just did come out of the blue. I knew it was open, obviously. I knew Andy Geiger in the business for being in different committees, things of that nature. But I actually turned down the interview twice.
What?
Yeah, I did. And let's be clear, Doug. I mean, you know Cleveland. I was in Arizona living on a golf course, 10th tee box right out the back gate, pool in my backyard, mountains in the backyard. I could play 9 with 3 clubs, with 2 beers. I want to come back to Ohio.
Wow.
Come on.
But what a huge mistake you made.
That was not really it. But it was more about I've been fortunate at Eastern Michigan, the time I was there, the 10 years, and Iowa State for 7, Arizona State. I didn't complete the goals I set out at Arizona State to complete. I had asked a lot of people and established relationships with a lot of people to invest in what we were doing. And when you have a vision and you are out there asking people to help invest in your vision, I had a hard time leaving it. I really did. I didn't have a hard time leaving Eastern Michigan. I wanted to move up. I had a hard time leaving Iowa State only because of the relationships there, but Arizona State was the next step mm-hmm. up. So I had a hard time taking the interview. My wife Sheila and one of her friends, Jewel Parker Rhodes, who was a phenomenal writer there and teacher at Arizona State, one night shared with me that I needed to at least go and do the interview.
Okay.
And so that's how I ended up doing the interview. I remember waking up on a Sunday morning and getting dressed to go to Dallas. The interview was in Dallas in the bottom of a hotel. And since I didn't really care a whole lot, I didn't have on a tie.
Mm. You don't have a tie on today.
And this is a different story, but those of you who know my wife, if I was going to an interview without a tie, you know what I heard that morning. So I ended up wearing a tie. But anyway, so that's how I ended up. I initially turned down the 2 interviews, but took the 3rd one.
Okay. Ohio State cannot be in the business of only hiring people from Ohio. That would be limiting.
Right.
But is there something to cultural fit to a job in college athletics, whether it's an administrator or a coach? The fact that you are from Cleveland, mm-hmm. that you grew up in Ohio, how did that matter to you in taking this job, and how do you think that has mattered to you in 19 years of doing this job?
Yeah, I guess it's more personal than anything. The fact that I am from Ohio and Cleveland, and I was hopeful when I came here that this would be my last job and I would end my career in the state that I love. It meant something to me. And also, because I grew up here, I had a deep appreciation for the people of Ohio and what they all stand for. But that's not a requirement. That shouldn't be a prerequisite for anybody to be hired to work in the state of Ohio. It did provide me an advantage, understanding where to drive and all those type of things, mm-hmm. but and just understanding the culture of the state and a little bit of the history of the state. But I don't think it's a prerequisite, but it was a benefit for me.
All right, so let's get into doing this job. Overseeing 36 varsity sports, you obviously have associate athletic directors who all have responsibilities mm-hmm. for various sports, but when you think about the coaches that you have worked with in your time here, what did you want your relationship to be with all of your coaches, and how did you manage that? Did you have a little chart where you said, I need to call this coach today, I need to visit this coach today, I need to get to this sport? How do you manage relationships with that many people that are all, I would imagine, very important?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with at least my philosophy and just who I am. If you just care about people, you find a way. And I'm fortunate, I have two unbelievable administrative assistants. One is my director assistant, Kim Heaton, who's here today. She controls my world with my calendar, and my other associate, Amy Dingus, who also works with Kim and controlling my world. But I am a little crazy about my calendar. So I do a lot of calendar work.
Okay.
Kim and I would periodically get on a three-way with myself, Kim, and my wife Sheila, and we go day by day by day for 1 month or maybe even 6 months. My wife is very involved in athletics because of her background, so she likes to go to athletic events, so I'm really blessed in that way, but also I don't want her surprised. If I'm not gonna be at home one night, I don't want that phone call, that text message we get.
Yeah.
So I probably am like everyone else. I just commit myself to that, and the people are the heart and soul of all that matters. So there was a great management writer by the name of Peter Drucker, and I read years ago one of his management books about management by roaming around. And early in my career at Ohio State, I used to roam around more. I'd drop in on coaches, I'd see their practices and spend time with them. But it's more about some of these other platforms like meetings and things of that nature where I connect with them, or different events or going to their contests. But I want to know our coaches. I want to know them as people and what they're all about. I want to know their character. So I try my best to get to know them. That's just a lot of staff that way. It's just not the coaches, it's other people as well. So you got to make the effort and to get out to meet them and spend time with them. And I appreciate and understand what they do. And they may report to somebody else structurally, but behaviorally, we have to have a relationship.
When you were dropping in on them, do you think your coaches thought, hey, Gene's here? Or did they think, uh-oh, Gene's here?
No, it got to a point where after a while when they're like, oh, this is what he does.
Okay.
Right? There's certain places that makes this difficult to do. Holly and Monica sitting over there with synchronized swimming. It's hard for me to go to McCorkle and just pop in. Although, you guys want to come up? Do you want to? I told him I was going to do this, but anyway.
We'll have coaches come up, yeah.
But anyway, I think really they just are okay with me popping in. And we sit and chat about whatever. And it might be 5 minutes or it might be 20 minutes. But as a result of that, I get invited to do things by them. And that's really important, too, where they feel comfortable inviting me to come to something or a meal with the athletes or whatever. Volleyball does that a lot. Just different things. So it's kind of cool.
One of the most high-profile things that any athletic director does is hire coaches.
Yep.
In the great scheme of things, how important is that part of your job? And you think about some of the coaches that have been hired in your tenure, mm-hmm. Tom Ryan in wrestling and Nadine mm-hmm. Muzzaral in women's hockey and Ryan Day with football. How much of that was a collaborative effort? How much of that is you sitting and grinding it out and like making that decision? What was your process mm-hmm. for making coaching hires?
It's the most important hire you make. 36 sports, coaches are the engineers of young people's lives. And so those of you who have children, you're entrusting your child to us. And so we have to have coaches who understand, you know, our philosophy and how we operate. But that coach is the engineer of a lot of young people's lives, and depending upon the size of your team. And so they set the culture for the team. They work with the student athlete on her or his issues, whatever they may be. They may ultimately arise to us, or the coach may ask us for help. But at the end of the day, the first majority of time, the first person is the coach or her or his, you know, support staff around there. So they are the engineers. So you got to make sure that you hire the right people. And so the process, it is rare that I ever make a decision alone on anything. I think a mistake that leaders make is not being inclusive, not using all the intellectual capacity around you. We're all the total sum of our experiences in life. And if you don't take advantage of all the experiences that others have, or take advantage of the intellectual capacity that others bring to the table, then you don't see your blind spots. And through the eyes of others, you see yourself, so you don't see your blind spots. So I am a group thinker. Now, a lot of times I'll have to make the final decision, but I believe that you ought to include people. The other part of that is for my sport administrators. You know, as you know, there's some of my teammates in the past who are now athletic directors. Mm-hmm. I try and encourage them to think this way. You have X number of sports. That means you have X people underneath you. That means you have X athletes. That means you have this size budget. That means you have this responsibility for revenue. That means you have this responsibility for, you're an athletic director at a small institution. Run it that way. Think that way. And so when you go and interview for a job, you tell them how big a budget you were responsible for, how many people you were responsible for. The whole ship is yours. And so you start that way. So usually we have a committee, we have student athletes on the committee, and they go through a process, and majority of the time I'm staying in touch with whoever's leading that process. We're talking about candidates. I may call some people that I know about that candidate. I may ask somebody in department, like, you know, an equipment manager, to call an equipment manager at another school and say, what's she really like? You know, you're gonna have, everybody's got somebody on their resume. I ain't gonna call those people. I mean, you'd be stupid to put somebody on a resume that's gonna say something negative about you, so I ain't gonna waste my time calling them. Have the trainers call the trainers and find out, you know, how did he really treat you? So it's a process.
That's good advice, everybody. If someone's on your resume, Gene's not calling them.
No, I ain't
calling. Take that note.
Okay. Not me. If you're that stupid to put somebody on your resume, they ain't going to say something good about you. I mean, what's wrong with you?
Search firms or no? Did you employ?
I've only used in my career, I wouldn't actually call them search firms. There's individual guys in there, you know, who work out of their home. Who would do some background work and connections for me.
Okay. But you want to run that process,
I
Ohio
want to run
State.
That process. I want our team to run that process, and we want all in. Now, sometimes you have to use a search firm. I just haven't been that way. I just haven't had to. I just haven't had to yet.
Okay. The other side of that is when...
I shouldn't say yet, because there will not be...
Yeah. Well, there's no more yets, Gene.
There's no more yets.
Yeah. 19 years. It's a legacy.
I'm done.
You're done. The other side of this is when a coaching change is required.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you want to be collaborative in the hiring process. You think about some of the difficult decisions that have been made here, whether it's with Jim Tressel, whether it's with Thad Matta, whether it's just recently with Chris Holtman. How do you handle that process when you are deciding and thinking about a possible coaching change? And is that collaborative, or is that more you trying to make that decision?
Yeah, it is collaborative. It's usually when I get to a point where I'm saying, based upon whatever, I think I got to make a change. So then I'll pull people in, you know, depending upon the situation, and I'll talk through why I feel what I feel. Help me see what I don't see. And, you know, there's majority of the time in my career, everybody's on the same page when I get to that point. But we talk about it. And, you know, is it, you know, should we give this individual another year? What haven't we done to help this individual be successful? What do we know about the student athletes and how do they feel? So you go through a process to make sure that you're ready to make that move. And that's not easy. I mean, if you care about people, and you want to be humanistic and you want to be sensitive in the process, you don't sit in your office and just make that decision alone. You don't, because you just don't know what you don't know. And so now I've yet to be in a situation where my teammates anywhere have said, I shouldn't say that. Actually, there was a time in my career where we gave that person another year. But normally in my career it's been, you know, we need to make the move.
Okay. I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, when we think about an athletic department, I think are the three main things: serving the health and well-being of your athletes, mm-hmm. winning, mm-hmm. and money. Mm-hmm. Am I covering the bases there mostly for the most part?
No, you're
no,
not even close.
No, I just said
whole,
three.
I mean, that's you. You don't have enough paper.
Yeah.
I mean,
sorry.
Those things are important. There's no question. But culture. People. How people behave. We have 609. What? 609, somewhere in that area. Staff of employees in athletics and business advancement. People forget we got business advancement, which is the hotel, Nationwide Arena, trademark licensing, all that. So having a culture with all of those teammates that operate from a value-based culture, integrity, respect, work ethic, excellence. And then they have their own personal values, family, spirituality, whatever it might be. And you embrace that and you encourage that. But you the others, you got to make sure everybody's got it. You know, I have a hard time with the exception of that time I was on the sideline of Michigan, but I have a hard time with people who disrespect people. I do. I don't care where you're from, what you look like, what your sexual orientation is. I really don't care. But I want people who get things done. Who get things done. And now those things may, bubble up to some of the things you're talking about. We have a revenue generation committee. Upper Deck Golf is going on right now, right, at the stadium. With 11,000 people. And I don't know what it's going to generate, but that came out of our revenue generation committee where they're just brainstorming about, okay, this is something we should look at and do. And I'm like, what is that? Right? But empowering them to be able to think differently. To do that, while it's going to generate money, in the end, it's also fun for our Buckeye Club members and all those type of things. So, safety. We put 102,000 people in the SHU for, let's say, 4 or 5 hours. I will tell you that, where's Erica? I'm a complete idiot when it comes to safety. I don't want to be that one. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be that one. And so that ties to money, but that's also about the care that we should provide people. I worry about the parking lots and some freaking idiot with a gun. Remember, was it 2 years ago? We went through just a process of talking about what happens if that happens. You know, what's our triage program? I mean, people don't think about those things, but, you know, so yes, those things, I can keep going. I mean, those things are important, but, you know, we don't have 6 hours.
No, I wish.
So, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot more to running this than those three things. And we bring people together. You know, concerts, events, bar mitzvahs, athletic events, we bring communities together. If you go out into the RV parking lot around football games, it's a community. Mm-hmm. Or if you sit in a certain section at the stadium, it's a community. There's an usher that's been working there for, you know, 20 years. And she or he knows everybody in that section. And, oh, Jen's not here this week. Where's Jen? And somebody over there, oh, she's on a trip. They know. And by the way, Jen gave me her seats. I mean, that's a community, because they've been sitting together for years. Mm-hmm. And so we have a responsibility to make sure that those communities have a quality experience from the time they jump on 315 and come down to the shoe or wherever. And so, you know, my facilities team goes nuts when I stand out in the west side of the stadium and I look at traffic and then I walk into their TV room and I'm like, Erica, show me this, or show me this gate. So, because they know how I think. How do we move those people from this gate to that gate in order to make sure they get in faster? Or, so anyway, I'm kind of going off, but those are all the things that run through my head.
I think the parking directions are very good on game day. Don't you guys feel like when you show up, they direct you to the right spot?
You get there early and you stay late, so yeah. You don't.
when we talk about the health and well-being of athletes, though,
it's another category.
The Leadership Institute, Ohio State, I think you guys have done a lot with like sports psychology. Obviously, right. Mental health has been a big conversation within Ohio State athletics. How much is that part of your daily process of we're trying to, we want to win, we want to do all these other things, but we got to make sure we're making things, we're serving these athletes.
Yeah, that gets back to the hiring of a coach, right? They're kind of the epicenter of that and making sure they create a culture where, you know, student athletes understand that they can go to someone if they are struggling and need help, and creating that culture. You know, athletes, you know, they feel like they can handle things by themselves sometimes, and that's not the way they should operate. So we put a pretty, what we call a circle of care around them. So we talk about that quite a bit. And each team, each coach has their own method for tracking behaviors of their athletes. The days of, you know, an athlete having a bad practice and you just yell at them and beat them up, they're gone. You know, you need to go to where the athlete is. I mean, they may be going through some issue that you just don't know about, so you have to show them that care. That's a big part of what we do. We have experts, sports psychologists or athletic trainers. We got those people. We have to use them. It's a big part of what we do.
Then there's winning. I believe it's 35 team national championships in your time here.
Okay.
How much, this is a ridiculous question at Ohio State, how much does winning matter?
Pretty ridiculous.
I know, you have
Bill
to ask
Landers
a question
there.
To get
what kind of question
know,
is that he's asking?
Does
what
winning
that?
Matter at Ohio State?
No, we want to win. Yeah, we want to win. We want to win in everything we do. I mean, that's you know, you for a lot of different reasons you want to win, but one of them is those student athletes deserve that experience. Oh, that's why they come to Ohio State, is to be put on a platform, to be coached, to be developed, so that they can win. You ask any app, they want that ring. They want that rock. And or you go on social media and you see the synchronized swimming team and they're like holding their rocks out like that, or the pistol team holding their four rocks out like that. They want to win. The dance team leaves next Tuesday for the world. Is that right? I might have that wrong. They want to win. And so that's what we have to do in our environment, is to create that environment so that they can have that remarkable experience of winning. It carries with you for the rest of your life. And for me personally, when I won as a student athlete, I remember those experiences, and they helped drive me today.
You mentioned synchronized swimming. You think about the pistol team, the fencing team. Men's volleyball has won national championships here. The women's hockey team has won two of the last three. The 2014 national championship in football, obviously. When you think about the success here, is there anything, anything that leaps to front of mind of moments where you're sitting there and Ohio State's lifting a trophy?
Yeah, I have to say, I've obviously been asked that. I had to reflect on it. And, obviously the football championship was huge. I mean, there's a lot of them. But I got to tell you that the wrestling championship in St. Louis, and it may be because I had such a connection with those athletes. And I remember I was in, North Carolina at a women's first or second round, whatever it was, and I had to fly to St. Louis, and we had to run to get in there. And seeing those athletes on that stage in that environment with their individual championships, and it was just you got the Cal Snyders, you got the Miles Martins, you got the Tomasellos, I mean the Logan Stevers. I mean that was a juice team. And when you think of wrestling, a lot of sports are this way, but when you put a wrestler out there on the mat, it's a different world. It's a different world. And so I got jacked up around that championship. I was a complete idiot fan at that one. I didn't cuss anybody out, but I was close.
Close. That's good to know. The Director's Cup.
Yeah.
This is a way to measure success across all sports. I believe in your tenure, Ohio State finished second three times, in the top five six times. Never quite got over the top against Stanford, man. They're tough.
They're tough.
Are you mad? Did you think you were ever going to get them?
No. Well, there was one year I thought we were going to get them. We were so close. But Stanford does such a great job. I mean, I really pay tribute to them, and the point system kind of plays in their favor.
But here it is. You're the point system. Yeah, you're mad a little bit.
Point system kind of plays in it. Ross knows this. It kind of plays in their favor. But it is a joy for us as a department to be recognized in that grouping. It's a measurement that, it's like rankings for an institution on the U.S. News World Report. And so for us, it's always important to be in the hunt. And I think North Carolina is the only team that ever actually won it outside of Stanford. Who?
Texas.
Texas. So otherwise, Stanford's won it every year.
Yeah.
But we got to be in the hunt. And I think right now we're 10th after the winter. Is that right? So we puts a lot of pressure on our spring sports.
You think Texas, Florida, Michigan, there are some other big powers that operate near the top of the Director's Cup standings.
Right.
But I don't know if you said this originally. I certainly have stolen it from whoever said it many times over the years. But I think you could argue, maybe it's not only, but it's one of the few, that Ohio State wants to compete with Alabama in football and wants to compete with Stanford and everything else. Which is not how everybody operates,
right?
There certainly are athletic departments that are like, football is it, and we're not worried about the Director's Cup. There are other places that maybe want to be more holistic. What has it been? Do you believe there is something to striking a balance between serving a monster football program and serving 35 other sports as well? Is there any push and pull there, or does that seem to you like, well, of course we can do all of it? Because I'm telling you, Gene, I don't think most places try to do all of it.
Yeah, we're complete idiots. We try everything. We try to do it all. And now the model's going to change. That will make it very difficult.
Yes.
But where we were and where we are, No, we try and put the resources in place that's necessary for every single sport to have a chance to chase the dream. And that obviously elevates to the Director's Cup. But, you know, philosophically, everywhere I've been fortunate, been blessed. You know, the student-athlete experience in every single sport is the same as it is in football. When you get down to it, when you get granular and you get down to the competitive experience that the student athlete has, it's the same. It's a different sport, of course it is. And there's a different visibility to it, of course it is. But, you know, when our volleyball team goes to the weight room, they're going through the same grind. It's a different type of grind, but it's still going to challenge you the same way physically as it would a football player. So I want them all to win. That's going to be difficult moving into the future. It will be to give every single sport that same level of support necessary to do that. So we may have to, or they may have to change their expectations with individual sports, but every sport we have right now, we expect to win.
Do you wish, you're talking about the future and you caught yourself there. It's not we, it's they now for you. We all see what's coming, and we're going to get to more of your ideas about the future of college sports, but as you sit here right now, do you wish that this transformation was happening 15 years ago and you were going to be right in the thick of it? Or are you kind of like, man, I'm glad to let everybody else figure this out because this is going to be complicated?
Yeah, I'm probably, no, not at all. I'm not leaving because of the changes. I mean, I'm probably that idiot that, you know, embraces it. You know, there's a little part of me that, you know, wishes that I had, you know, I was younger and you know, I'd want to embrace that change. I mean, change is inevitable in life. And change has always happened in our industry. Now, there's never been this aggregate of issues that's causing this change, never. But you either embrace change or you become irrelevant. It's that simple. And over the years, we've embraced change. I've always taken life that way. I struggle with being in environments where everybody's sitting around the table talking about how bad things are. That's a waste of intellectual capacity and energy. Let's talk about the solutions. We can sit there and, I shouldn't use these words, but okay, I'm not gonna do it, because Sheila might be watching. But anyway, you can sit there and complain about the issues, or you can become the solution to the issues. And I've always faced things that way. Cost of attendance, took 7 years. Had we done some of the things that we should have done in the business a long time ago, you know, we might not be where we are. But yeah, I'm not leaving because of the issues that's in front of us. I mean, there's a part of me that wants to, like, you know, be in it. But, you know I gotta leave that to the young puppies.
College sports, I think, is a lot about balance, right? You're trying to figure out. And I think one of the most fascinating but also complicating parts of this is that we're dealing with people at a transformative stage of their lives, right? Everybody,
right.
You come to college as a kid and you leave as an adult.
Right.
And so this balance of when you are a college athletic department, are you there to look out for, to serve, to care for your athletes? Or now, as we move into this era, are you there to be a partner to your athletes who are compensated and who are not? It's not a parent-child relationship, which maybe it was before. It's more of a equal partners relationship. Is that a fair characterization? And then, in a world where we saw the Dartmouth basketball team unionize and we all know what's happening, what's the solution? Solve it. Yeah. Here, you got 25 more minutes. But I think it's what's great about college sports. But it also is a complicating factor that just does not exist. People know what high school sports are. They know what pro sports are.
Right.
But what are college sports? What is the right balance of all this as we move into the future?
I hope that whatever model emerges, that we never forget really what you said. These are still 17, 18 year old kids that come to us and they mature, hopefully, not all of them do, but hopefully, over that 4 or 5 year period. And so we're different than the pros that way. The other piece that we always got to keep in mind is that is really what you said and what we talked about earlier. The parents are still giving us those kids. So even though the proposition is different, if we don't help those kids develop the right way, you know, the onus is still on us. And the parents might not be calling us about NIL. They might be calling us about something else relative to their child. And that's what we got to keep in front of us is we don't draft, we recruit. So our coaches sit in front of parents or a third party person and convince that person that Ohio State's the right place for them to come and be developed. That core is still there. So that's a responsibility. Now the proposition, as you said, changes a little bit, you know, with NIL, changes with probably what's going to happen in the future, you know, around the House case in particular, where we're going to have a different compensation model probably for student athletes. So that proposition will change. Agents are involved now in a lot of sports. So that proposition's changed as well. So how you deal with them there. But, you know, where hopefully you have a chance to still develop that 17, 18, 19 year old around their values, their character, the issues that they're dealing with. I mean, we got student athletes who come to us and they have advisors already for some of the psychological issues they dealt with in high school. So how do you help them on that pendulum? And so I'm hopefully that we keep this tethered to education, to academics, and understand all those other issues around it and manage it. But it's just gonna be different. There's no question about it.
We'll come back to some of this, but 51 years ago, Congress acted with Title IX in a way that transformed college sports, clearly for the better. Do you believe, how much do you think Congress should be involved in solving or helping to solve the current issues facing college athletics, or should this be something that the universities and the NCAA are able to figure out on their own?
No, we need Congress's help. I'm not so sure what the outcome of the antitrust cases will be, but we need Congress's help. I'm not a believer that student athletes should be or will be employees. I think there's state laws across the country are so different. I think it's going to be very difficult for the NCAA or any organization to say, okay, student athletes are employees. Well, you know, what states are right to work states? You know, I mean, you got ethics laws that are different in every state relative to employees. So the only way that happens is if Congress says, okay, student athletes are employees, and this is the classification in the federal law around student athletes in across the country and how they're going to be dealt with as employees. It's only one way to do that, federal law. Title IX is a federal law. So not a state law, federal law. And so now, I'm not subscribing to Congress saying that student athletes should be employees, but I do believe that based upon what happens with some of these antitrust cases, we may need Congress to help us with some protections around other lawsuits that could emerge over time. I don't have a lot of faith in the NCAA structure getting us out of this. I just don't. I believe that it served its purpose and it needs to be repurposed. So I look to Congress, I look to the cases in front of us, particularly the House case, to help determine our future.
Man, we should go 6 hours. Anyway, I wanted to ask you about the NCAA. The 2012 bowl ban might be the moment in your career where there was the most sort of like Ohio State and dealing with the NCAA and then not being happy with the NCAA. How did you feel about dealing with the NCAA in that situation? And do you feel like the NCAA has worked during your time as a college athletic director? And do you think it's working now?
Yeah, I think it's worked exceptionally well during my tenure. You know, there it was what it didn't do was shift. And so I'll come back to that in a minute. But I think there was a period of time when the association was strong, where the governance structure was strong. But, you know, everything is about leadership. And I have a lot of respect for Charlie Baker, our executive director now, president now, but you know, he's probably 4 or 5 years too late. And he's trying to, you know, recover. And the reality is the organization didn't shift with the times or the ecosystem that we served, and which is why you have all these interest groups, pressure groups in it right now. Lawyers, politicians, everybody. And so when there's a leadership void, then people will step in. And I'm not, you know, I just believe that for a long period of time, as an association, none of us forced a shift in the association. And that's caused some of the problems that we have today. It took us, as you know, I'm passionate about this. It took us 7 years to get cost of attendance. It took us the way that we could create the student opportunity fund was through a negotiation with the NCAA basketball tournament and embedded in that revenue share model, when we should have been able to provide Pell eligible student athletes with resources before that. But we had to create, so don't get me going. So that I'm gonna have flashbacks right now.
I wanna get you going.
Having flashbacks.
Yeah.
But the reality is that, you know, it's gotten so hard to make things happen. There's a piece of legislation right now that just passed through the NCAA Council on more institutional involvement around NIL.
Right.
You know, the NCAA Council brought on it. You know, we worked hard to get it there. It's passed yesterday. Now it's got to go to the board on Monday. And I probably shouldn't say this.
But you said...
I got to back up, Ross. I got to back up. I hope it passes Monday.
You said you think the NCAA has worked, and then you just listed a bunch of ways in which the NCAA has not worked.
No, it worked back in the day.
But it didn't evolve with the times.
It didn't evolve with the times.
So why not? Is it because... Is it because the NCAA and the schools didn't want to share the money? Or is it because there was a leadership vacuum that just prevented progress from being made?
I thought I'd said that in a different way. But yeah, that's good.
Okay.
You said it better than me. Yeah, I mean, we had a leadership vacuum. And
did you know it at the time? Did everybody know it?
I think so. Ross?
And there was nothing that could be done?
No. No, no. We all worked to try and facilitate change through the system, and we weren't successful in a lot of different ways. You know, you work with the system you have, and you try your best to facilitate change as best as you can. You know, the working group around NIL had a lot of guardrails in place when it went to the NCAA Board of Directors, and many of those guardrails were stripped. And you know, that's a problem. And so, anyway, I probably got to be careful here because there's 30.
No, you're retiring.
Happening.
You don't have to be careful.
So, yeah, I'm going to be respectful. But at the same time, you know, we it was just a leadership void. And I really believe that when you have a leadership void, then other people enter that space. And that's what happened for a number of years.
I want to detour briefly away from this. Because at times, I mean, I think there have been people out there who thought maybe could Gene be a candidate to be the Big Ten commissioner? Could Gene be a candidate to be the NCAA president? By my research, I believe in your time as the Ohio State Athletic Director, you've worked with 41 different Big Ten athletic directors, and that currently the other 17 schools that are now part of the Big Ten during your tenure have had 61 different athletic directors, which is an average of 3.6 athletic directors per school, while you've just been here doing your thing. Have you ever thought about leaving for another job before this?
No, I've been blessed to have an opportunity to have other people call me and ask me if I would be interested, but no.
Why not?
I love it here. I mean, you know, there's been a number of goals we set out to do that we've all accomplished, but this is a place where you can just keep setting, you know, goals. The visions never change, but the goals, it was just so much fun. So much fun. I didn't aspire to oversee a hotel. I love working with Stephanie at the Blackwell. I mean, I love overseeing a hotel now. We didn't aspire to win the management agreement at Nationwide Arena. But we were asked to participate and we jumped in and boom. And it's been a beautiful thing for us to be able to work with promoters. They're either at the Shot or they're at Nationwide Arena. But those things always were cool for me. I don't do the work, I'm with my teammates and they're doing it and having those conversations about, you know, Nicki Minaj last Friday night being in the Shot. You know, 13,000 showed up for that. You know, 30 people who stayed afterwards on the bridge waiting for her to come out. I mean, those things are fun for me, I don't know.
On the other side of that, when you're here for this long, there are going to be some bumps along the way.
Yeah.
You think about the 2018 situation where both you and Urban Meyer wound up serving suspensions as part of that. Have there been any times here where you were concerned for your future or thought my job may be in jeopardy?
Not really. Nope. I've always had a philosophy that, first of all, this institution owes me nothing. Nothing. I got paid every year for what I did. So when I'm fortunate enough to leave, I hope I can, got a couple months in here where I'm still leaving healthy. This institution owes me nothing. They paid me for everything that I did every single day and every single year. So that's one. If there was ever a time when the university felt that I should leave, I'm one of those people that believes I should leave. I don't want to stay somewhere where I'm not wanted. So, in 2011 with the NCAA issue, the other issues around my suspension, those point in times, if they ever came to me and said, hey, look, we've terminated you, you're no longer going to be your athletic director, then, I'm going to thank them and I'm going to find another job. That's life. Now, maybe that's overconfidence, but that's how I work. That's how I live. I've never lived in fear of that, they're going to come to me and tell me I'm out. I just don't think that way. If it happened, it happened. And if it happened, it's probably because of something that I did or didn't do. Now, if it was political or something of that nature, then, I'm not going to go to the street, but I'm going to handle it the right way and exit and go on and move on. So I've never thought that. I've never worried about that. The suspension was actually pretty cool. My wife did did tailgate parties in on game day, and I never had that experience where I had like tailgate parties in my house, and I'm watching TV and I'm eating hot dogs and drinking beer watching the games. It's like,
not so bad.
That was actually kind of cool. It was a break.
I have the word rapid written down before these last couple questions here. So you've worked with 5 university presidents, I believe, in your time here. Karen Holbrook, Gordon Gee, Michael Drake, Christina Johnson, and now Ted Carter. Who was your favorite? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not actually asking that.
There was a couple of interims in there,
A couple interims in there. One, two times as an interim. What is the correct relationship between an athletic director and a university president, and how would you describe your relationships?
Oh, awesome. I mean, it's important for the president and the athletic director to be aligned 100%. And when I left Eastern Michigan University, I actually put in my contracts, my future contracts, that I have to report directly to the president. I didn't want any gap in between. So you have to be 100% aligned, have to over-communicate, have to understand what his communication process is, and you got to stay in communication. My alignment with Ted Carter is phenomenal. I think he's going to be an outstanding president. And you got to be aligned. You got to have that relationship.
The college football playoff. Ohio State played 15 games when it won the national title 10 mm-hmm. years ago. You could potentially now in the 12-team playoff play 17 games. Mm-hmm. Or more likely, maybe the champs play 16.
Right.
Have you fully embraced this new playoff model? Do you have any concerns about the length of the season and the number of games for these football players?
Yeah, I have. That's a great one. I have a concern about the length of the season, and I've actually had concerns about the football student athlete experience practice wise overall. I don't worry about the games. Football players don't play that many games, frankly. So it's really about, making sure that you have a culture where the coach and your support staff, everybody understands, you got to manage practice. You got to take care of their bodies, the muscle tissue issues, all those type of things. Athletes will, there's athletes who have a high tolerance for pain. Tommy Eichenberg. High tolerance for pain. If his shoulder was out, he'd tape it up and keep playing. So you got to help him from himself. So having coaches understand that part is critical. It's critical. Now this is for all sports, but in this case is football. I worry more about just the practice part and the wear and tear on their bodies and making sure that our sports science and our coaches are aligned. To make sure you mitigate any issues. The games are, they don't play, if you ask a football player, they want to play more games. It's just minimize this practice thing that's become year round.
There's a million things we could talk about around the integration of these four new teams into the Big Ten.
Yeah.
In particular, the football schedule, what the Big Ten came up with, do you feel good about obviously maintaining the Ohio State-Michigan game, but like, for instance, not maintaining the Ohio State-Penn State game? How do you think the Big Ten did when it came to working out these new football schedules?
I think we did pretty good. I mean, there's probably going to be changes down the road. I mean, your first iteration of a model will be modified over time as we learn different things down the road. But I think it worked out pretty good. The Penn State thing, they're a competitive rivalry. They're not a historical rivalry like the team up north is, so giving that up periodically was the right thing to do for the overall good of the league. We're very strong that when we go west, we're going to have a bye date afterwards. Can that be maintained over time? I don't know. We'll learn that, but some of us were strong in the room that was important. So I think we did pretty good, but like with all of our sports, as those schedules are built, we'll get feedback from coaches and others, and a couple years from now, the model might change slightly based upon what we learn.
Player compensation. There was just the rule, the law passed in Virginia, I guess today even, of that now NIL can come inside athletic departments. I think we all see where it's moving. Where does this end? And is it necessary? Will it be good? Can it work for athletic departments to directly pay athletes, or at least some athletes? Mm-hmm. And what are the trade-offs that may be made with that when it comes to filling the other 35 sports?
Yeah, that's the big elephant in the room. You know, I think, will it work? Yeah, it'll work. You just have to figure out how. You know, I just don't know what the revenue share model is going to be. There's going to be some revenue share. And obviously, you know, football is very much a part of that. So I look at it this way, just simplifying it. It's room, board, books, and tuition, cost of attendance, Austin money, and I'm hopeful that it's NIL rights, whatever that number is. And so hopefully that happens. And for us, if not knowing what the court case is going to be, if it's just 85 scholarships or 125 football players, but you got 125 football players, you got 13 basketball players, you're at 138. So you got to, for us at least, you got to find 138 women on the other side. So you got 276 student athletes. You got to figure out what that model is. You know, what is that other number? I call it NIL rights. Then you create a licensing program for all of your student athletes. You bring NIL in-house like Virginia's doing. Mm-hmm. And you allow the university and you allow the athletic department to be able to do NIL deals for those student athletes. And the beauty part of that is you could create profiles for those student athletes. And, you know, I used to, you know, Zed Key's going to Dayton now, but I, you know, used to always say, well, God, we should get him a deal with an auto parts company because the guy likes to work on cars. Or those of you who went to the Peach Bowl and saw Matt Jones bowl, I'm like, God, we missed a boat on that. We would have been, I mean, he's a 300 bowler. We should have had him working at a bowling alley. You know, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
So you find those things that they're good at or interested in, and I think that's the model that I would say is a framework for the future.
But not sharing TV money?
Oh yeah, players? That's the revenue share. So
okay.
So whatever that is, that number is, it would come from TV money, okay, corporate sponsorship, ticket sales. So yes, that revenue share, and actually let's break it down, it's the house case in California. Whether it's settled or go to court, I don't know. But they're at the plaintiffs, Jeffrey Kessler is the attorney who's phenomenal. I got a lot of respect for him. I think they started at 50% of those dollars, media rights dollars, corporate dollars. So who knows what it's going to end up at. But that's, in my view, that's the one where it's going to tell us this is what it's going to be.
The idea of a Super League for college football is something that has been sort of floated out there for a long time. Mm-hmm. Would you be in favor of that? Do you think we will get to that, a world where we're not dealing with the Big Ten or a conference discussion like that, where maybe there's the 35 wealthiest or biggest football mm-hmm. teams are in a different tier and it's just a different model completely? Do you think we will get there? Would you be in favor of it?
I don't know if we'll get there or not. I think we got to be open to that conversation, you know, and what the private equity people are talking about. So I read about it, and I haven't paid a lot of attention to it. I would be more concerned about the revenue share. You know, it's 70 teams I think I read about and heard about, but you know, the Ohio States of the world aren't going to feed everybody.
But hasn't Ohio State fed everybody
no,
during your tenure?
No, we've only fed some of the teams in our league, and they fed us. I mean, we got to play somebody. So at the end of the day, you're talking 70 versus 18, and you're talking, you know, 16 in the SEC. So it's simple math. At the end of the day, and then, by the way, we're not the only school in our league that feeds others.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're talking 70. I struggle with that, and then maybe there's something I'm missing on the private equity side, and I'm not in the mix. So but I think we got to pay attention to that. We got to listen. We got to learn, because maybe that might be the right model. But I know this. I won't be in the seat, but places like Ohio State, if they're in that model, it can't be like the NFL model where revenue is shared equally. We don't draft, we recruit. And we chase championships and make investments to chase championships in football. Everybody else doesn't do that.
We've had many conversations. You've said this many times in your tenure, like a rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. And that Ohio mm-hmm. State, sometimes I've said, Gene, why doesn't Ohio State throw its weight around more in the Big Ten? Mm-hmm. You wanted the Big Ten to succeed as a group.
Right.
We saw when Texas threw its weight around in the Big mm-hmm. 12, it basically blew up mm-hmm. the Big 12. This seems like a different conversation now. And is this because if we're entering a world where universities are going to pay players directly, mm-hmm. money is already driven a lot in college sports. But if we're entering this new reality, a place like Ohio State is going to have to be a little more mm-hmm. looking out for itself, and we're not as interested in sharing revenue equally, because you've shared revenue equally in the Big Ten since you got here.
Yeah, in the Big Ten, but it's simple math. You're talking about 70 schools versus 18 schools.
But
now
we're
talking about, I shouldn't pick on these schools, but schools that aren't in the
right.
Big Ten or the SEC. So Texas and Alabama are going in the SEC. They're sharing revenue with schools that don't bring in the same amount of revenue. Now you're talking about 70. Maybe there's something I obviously don't see.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'm not going to pull out names, but I don't have a problem with sharing revenue with the teams in our league. And we're not the only ones. You know, the team up north, Penn State, I mean, they're sharing revenue with teams in our league. But now you're going to add more of those teams.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Do you believe that we could get to a model where football players are not necessarily students of a university, but it's sort of you license the name and there's an association, but it's not the same relationship as it is now? Do you think we will get there? Would you understand if we did?
I'd hate it. I mean, I think whatever model exists has to be tethered to education. I mean, all the blessings that I've had, think back, not just football players, athletes over the years, we've changed so many people's lives. Many of them come into us and they're very mature and they're focused and they get things done, and we're facilitating their time and helping them develop. But there's some that come to us at a very immature level, and we do a great job of getting them maturity and a great job of helping the light bulb come on for them. And I can give you names of student athletes where I'm like, oh my God, the light bulb came on. And it could be academic, it could be athletic, or whatever it is. I just think in higher education, we got to keep it tethered to education. If not, if it's not a part of that, then, you know, make it semi-pro and just take it outside the institution, and you pay the institution a contract to use the stadium, and you know, that model would bother me. Because I would know that those student athletes who, regardless of the fact that they might be getting some level of money, they're not being taught how to live the next part of their lives. I don't know, that's probably the old school in me. I'm just passionate about giving these young people the opportunity to be educated. And there's so many of them. And a lot of them now live here in Columbus.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
The last word I have written down here for the last question is just grandpa. Mm. You tweet out pictures of your grandkids a lot. What are you going to do with your grandkids now when you don't have to be doing athletic director
everything.
Stuff anymore?
Everything. I'm going to be a complete idiot. I'm going to show up in school and they're like, what are you doing here? But my life has been so full of my blessing and my work. I haven't had that opportunity to just and go to their sporting events, go to their school activities, their plays or whatever it might be, or pick them up on a Saturday morning and go to breakfast, or, you know, a couple of them are old enough to go to the golf course now. So I'm going to be a part of their lives. And
they're actually the same thing with my children, my four children. I have it. Been in their lives as much as I want to be. So I want them to quality to, you know, do whatever my wife told
me. So he did something.
Very smart.
Gene Smith, your first day on the job here was April 15th, 2005. Your final day will be June 30th, 2024. That is 19 years, 2 months, and 15 days. And the Ohio State Athletic Director, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts here with everybody. Thanks to everybody for showing up here, for watching. 19-year Gene Smith, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah.